Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Hi, I'm Judy Davis, and I'm here with my co-host and partner in crime, as Sandy and I always say, Sandy Fowler. And we love being here each week to interview amazing guests and to share thoughts on all kinds of topics in our Real Talk segment. What you may not know is that we also do a number of things outside of the Mighty Parenting podcast. And one of those is that we are the co-founders, along with Jeffrey Davis, of Dasium, a company that's leading the way in preventing depression, addiction, and suicide in teens and young adults. You know, our work at Dasium focuses on upstream strategies for being emotionally healthy in our families. And we work with colleges, schools, and other organizations, as well as providing products to help create awareness, increase knowledge, and encourage action. So periodically, Sandy and I are going to just go there, kind of share our knowledge, share our information, and talk about topics that we see out there that will help you keep your children emotionally healthy. Sometimes we're going to be talking about depression, addiction, and suicide. Other times we're going to be handling some lighter topics, as well as helping you recognize when there's a problem within your kids.
Right, Judy. And this week, what we're going to talk about has really actually been a hot topic for a little while. And yet, when I talk to parents, a lot of them are not really aware of just how big of a problem it is, or that, you know, it could affect them. And so we're going to be talking about prescription drug use and abuse. And this came up right now is, you know, conversations with parents, but I was at a community meeting this week at our county health department, and they shared that they are reaching out to local colleges just to get some programs going, to try and get some conversations going on campus with the kids, as well as, you know, faculty and staff, but conversations going about how the kids are using drugs, because they're using them to handle the stressors of college life. We find that they're using them to do things that, you know, we've all had to do in our lives, and people did, you know, in college for years, but now prescription drugs are so widely available that they're using prescription drugs to do things like staying awake or staying focused, you know, trying to get that super hyper focus for studying. You know, they want to do better on exams, or just to deal with the stress of school.
It's interesting that you say that about college students, because this last couple weeks, I have received multiple phone calls from parents of high schoolers who are also feeling that immense amount of pressure. And the parents called me to ask me what they do, because their kids are saying, my friend is using XYZ. And the parents are actually interested and confused about what they can do. And it just made me realize that parents don't understand that their own medicine cabinets is a place that our kids could turn to get high or find that relief from all those things you were talking about, Sandy. And I know that you coach people in stress relief. So a question I want to ask you is, why do our kids turn to drugs to take that pressure off? Why do they do that?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, Judy, because the word stress is tossed around so willy-nilly in our society. You know, we talk about stress for everything from, oh my goodness, I'm running 5 minutes late, up to and through people actually having stress to the point of creating medical problems. So, you know, with our kids, they're also experiencing it at all those levels. And there are lots of things that are happening that are actually putting our kids under tremendous pressure. And so we have this combination of tremendous pressure, the kind that we never experienced as kids. And the other side of that is not only they're experiencing this pressure, but they don't have the healthy coping strategies to relieve that pressure and to help them feel good. And, you know, sometimes it's because some of the times as parents, we don't necessarily have those strategies to share with our kids. So when the kids have huge pressure, no way to relieve it, they will turn to unhealthy coping mechanisms. And one of the things that's really interesting to me with the prescription drug issue is that kids can inadvertently discover that medication or drugs can make that stress, that emotional pain that they're feeling go away. And so what I mean by that is we're out there, you know, we're living our life, we're doing whatever we're doing, and things happen physically. You know, maybe they broke a bone, maybe they have to get their wisdom teeth out. Something happens to their body where they end up at the doctor and the doctor prescribes them a pain reliever. Well, pain reliever, you know, we went from this, well, try taking some aspirin or try taking some, you know, Tylenol, Motrin, over-the-counter pain relievers, to suddenly, for everything that happens, they're prescribed narcotic painkillers. And so these are very intense. These are things that when this kid takes it, yes, it relieves that physical pain. What a lot of them discover is it also relieves that emotional pain. And suddenly they go, oh my gosh, this numbs everything. And Judy, I know actually your family had that experience, right?
We did. And looking back, you know, we say hindsight is 20/20. And I still remember my son laying on the couch. He was on a travel soccer team and messed up his knee pretty bad and was in a full cast from hip to ankle. They had prescribed him medication because he was in so much pain. And I can remember when we got home giving him the first dose, and the second it kicked in, it was like he looked at me and said, "Mom, this is the greatest stuff ever. It takes away all the pain." And as a parent, I went, yes, because he had been suffering for hours on end at the ER. But what he meant about the pain had nothing to do with his knee. At that time, I had no idea of the emotional pain he was in and how depressed he actually was, because he was the master at putting that mask on and pretending like everything was okay. And that's why I'm so glad we're talking about this, because if someone had told me that his reaction was actually a warning sign for me to perk up and start paying attention to what was going on, things might have unfolded very differently, and we could have gotten him help before he attempted to take his own life and became addicted to drugs and alcohol.
So, yeah, it's that moment that, well, like I said, it's that discovery moment. They don't know what drugs would do for them, or alcohol, or, you know, or binge eating, or all these other unhealthy coping strategies that we have. But, you know, right now we want to just stay focused on especially the prescription drugs,
right?
Because while street drugs are there, and we'll address those in some future show, the prescription drugs, to me, that's sneakier, because most households have some kind of prescription drug in them. And the interesting thing is that a lot of times the drugs were prescribed for the kid who ends up becoming addicted.
Well, it's interesting that you use the word sneakier, because that's exactly when, and keep using our family's experiences here, but when we were in treatment and my son was in treatment and we were in our family week, I looked at the therapist and said, how was I so blind not to know that he'd been abusing prescription meds? And the therapist looked at me and said, one, because he didn't want you to know, and two, because it's very easy to see that someone is high on alcohol. You can smell it on their breath. Drugs, they have different physical things. But when it's a prescription med, oftentimes you can't see it on the outward appearance. So sneaky, it is that. Not so much just from the kid, but because of the type of drug it is, what happens on the inside isn't so visible on the outside.
So it sneaks up on parents in two ways. One, we don't really think about it ahead of time, because these are things prescribed by a doctor for a reason. There's a very good reason to have them in our home. So they're sneaky because it's just there. And on the other side, it's something that sneaks up on parents because there are not those physical signs of your child using something like you get with street drugs or alcohol.
I mean, until it gets out of control. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So you won't notice it when they're experimenting or even just using it once in a while. With prescription meds, you don't know it's a problem until it's in crisis. Mm-hmm. That's the interesting part of it in identifying it. And that was the aha moment for me as a parent, and why I think having shows and talking about this stuff and what it is so important. But I want to know something. I always asked why? Mm-hmm. Why did my son turn to this? So I want to go back to the pressure thing. What is it about what's going on now that makes pressure so much more intense? Or maybe that's just a thought in my head, but it feels like our kids are under so much more pressure that they're looking for escape.
Well, I agree, Judy. And I've looked at this and gone, where is it coming from? Because I know, you know, with my girls, as it first really showed up to me when they were in high school, is when it really kind of got in my face. And it was, I think, because they were coming home and talking about things that I didn't think they needed to be worrying about or thinking about. They were essentially pushing themselves so hard at everything they did, whether it was an extracurricular activity or their academics or figuring out what they wanted to be when they grow up, all those things that are normal teenage things to think about or do, were at just so much of a higher level of their expectations. And I was trying to figure it out because I knew it wasn't coming from me and my husband. You know, in the sense, you know, we were fortunate that our girls were self-motivated to deal with school. We didn't have to hound them to do homework or anything. So we were actively, the parents, because we hear things coming from them, we were actively telling them, back off. Don't worry about it. You don't need to graduate with, you know, such and such a GPA. If it's a little bit lower, that's okay. You know, and it showed them examples of why those things don't have to be. And yet that's what we still heard. So, you know, I've looked at that and I've watched that. And that's one of the things that I'm really intrigued with. As we bring guests on this show, we are digging into that from all different angles. So one thing I was going to say is, if that's something that any parent is concerned about, keep listening to the shows because you're going to find different things. Today, you know, I think you and I can talk a little about what we've seen. And I think some of the things that are happening are like, well, I said this, trying to figure out what they want to be when they grow up. In middle school, they mm-hmm. were doing career exploration, which, you know, doing casual exploration seems like a great idea. But by the time they were in high school, it was like they need to have picked a career.
Right. And they had to have the right classes to be able to get that career. And I know that when our kids sign up for classes, they feel guilty if they want to take art or music or any of those type of things because it won't prep them for what they need to have the career they want.
Or to get them on the track where they're taking 4 AP classes in their senior year, or they're getting, you know, 1 or 2 years worth of college courses done when they're in high school. And don't get me wrong, I think opportunities are great, but you asked me, and this is my opinion on pressure. And I don't blame the school per se. I'm blaming society. And that includes me, my family, you know, everybody that our society has structured somehow in a way that our kids feel like they have to make all these choices and they have to have things figured out when they're really young. And they have to do things where they don't screw up. They don't make a mistake. They don't ever fail.
Exactly.
And so those are places of pressure. And we can get into some of that if we need to. There's the social media aspect. Judy, you go.
I'll give you social media soapbox. I was just going to say social media is my soapbox thing when it comes to teens, because their life is on display and they're constantly feel like they're being judged. And that's that pressure that if they don't do things perfectly, and they aren't perceived as everything in their life is running on this high level, then something is wrong. And I know as parents, in some ways, like you said, you didn't contribute to that. But as parents,
in other ways, I'm sure we did. Don't get me wrong. It was just that one specific area of I knew that the pressure for classes and grades wasn't coming from us.
Exactly. So how as parents do we contribute? What is it that we do that contributes to this phenomena, a pressure cooker thing that makes our kids seek out prescription drugs as a release at times?
Yeah. So one really interesting thing, and my kids are in college now, and I am just figuring this out because my family and my husband's family are in a social aspect, the way that we interact with each other on the surface to other people probably looks the same, but living inside of it, I've seen that it's very different. And we're very fortunate on both sides. We have very loving, caring, helpful families. But I found that when it comes to my two girls, they each have different comfort levels with the two sides of the family. And my one girl who deals with, you know, she's not neurotypical. Her brain is wired differently than the rest of society. And I know that she struggles more with my family than with my in-laws. And so I've been really analyzing this and looking at it and trying to figure it out. And the reason I'm sharing it here today is because I am most definitely a product of my family. And it's all love and concern and caring. It's that we express it differently. We express through helping. So when someone shares something with us, we give helpful tips or helpful advice or really, you know, I've been in that before, and this is what I did and what worked and what didn't work, or did you think about this? And it's all total, like I said, it's total love, concern, respect, caring. But on the other end of it, for her, it feels like judgment. And you mentioned that word, Judy, and that's something that you and I have found, because with our work with Dacian, we talk to teenagers, we talk to young adults who have been in trouble, who have dealt with eating disorders and addictions and cutting and thrill-seeking behavior and drug and alcohol addiction and suicide attempts. And the common thread we get is that judgment piece. And so that's my piece. Like I said, I knew they weren't getting pressure from a lot of things, but me being helpful and being a problem solver on top of it, I'm sure that that's where I have added pressure. So I have backed off of even simple things like, you know, they'll tell me about something and instead of commenting on, you know, what I see about it or that was a good idea or you did a great job. Well, those are all loving, caring, and quote unquote supportive. They can also feel judgmental. So I'm focusing on going, you seem to feel, and I phrase my things that way. You seem excited about that. It seems like that was really hard for you, or I'm sorry that you're hurting over that.
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting that you talk about judgment that way, because one of the things that I work on regularly is not being a fixer. And I didn't realize, I didn't realize that in my effort to try and fix and help, what I was actually, the message I was sending, I think this is the commonality about the big thing with parents. The message I was sending was, you can't do it alone. And as parents, our goal is to help our kids be able to do things on their own. With our guidance, especially when we're talking teen and young adult years, we go from raising our kids to actually guiding, becoming a guide. And if we don't make that transition, the message we can send is, you aren't capable.
Yeah.
And that can really impact confidence and the ability to take a risk.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to that failure thing. So it's this tangled web we weave as parents in finding that balance of being parenting our kids and actually doing things that empower them as opposed to us trying to fix it so they don't experience pain or disappointment. Because we do want our kids to do well.
So, and that follows for me, Judy, because there's one other thing I wanted to touch on. I mean, there are probably lots of things we do as parents, but I think we've covered two big ones there. Third one, which leads into what you said, which is we don't want them to experience difficult emotions. We don't want them to experience any kind of emotional pain, sadness, fear, anxiety. But one of the mistakes we make is that fixing it when what we could be doing for them is teaching them those healthy coping strategies, teaching them how to walk through those emotions. And so as parents, I think one of the things we do is we fall down on the job of teaching them how to deal with that.
Exactly. Exactly. I couldn't agree more.
So these are a few things that we are doing that contribute to the problem. One last, just we don't have time to get into a big discussion on it, but I just want to say one other thing that we do that contributes is we put on blinders. We go, it couldn't be my kid. It couldn't happen to my kid. We don't have those kinds of problems. I look at my kid is fine. So as parents, you know, I just want to encourage us to be willing to just take off the blinders long enough to know, is my child hurting? That's the question there. Under whatever their action ends up being to deal with it, and whatever you think about that action, the real question is my child hurting emotionally? So those are four things that, you know, that we can look at as parents with the way that we are contributing.
And that's exactly what people would say to me after we started sharing Jeffrey's story. Judy, not your family. When you look at him, he looks fine. He's the boy next door, always a smile, always a this. And that's true when you see him on the outside. He was living his own personal hell on the inside and didn't let anyone in until he was ready to get help, which is something that is a common thread in teens and young adults that are struggling. So what I want to talk about, and I know we're getting close to time.
Yeah, what can we do? I mean, you know, fine. We've talked about the problems. We talked about what our kids are dealing with. So, you know, we're kind of sitting here in this, our own personal emotional quagmire of, oh my gosh, this is horrible. And it's not that horrible. One is your child may not be having these problems, but hey, you know, let's make sure we don't create it.
Exactly.
So let's take a look at ourselves and our parenting and what we do so that we don't create it. And just like putting parental controls on your computer when they're little, just like putting safety latches on the doors to the cabinets and things, you know, one of the things that we can do is to lock up prescription meds, because it may also not be your kid. It could be someone else's kid who's visiting your house. So, you know, lock them up when appropriate. Also, keep tabs on it. If you know, your husband, someone else in your family takes prescription meds, keep an eye on them and notice if any of them go missing. So,
and get rid of them when you're done.
Yeah, just take them to the pharmacy or call your local police department. They will tell you where you can dispose of them.
Exactly. Too many people, when I talk to families, too many times people will say, well, we kept that oxy or we kept that prescription med in case we got hurt later.
Yeah.
And that is kryptonite. That's just a problem waiting to happen.
And that includes pet meds too.
It does include pet meds, as well as that preemptive thing. Don't watch what your doctors prescribe. don't be so quick to go straight to the narcotic. You know, you can take extra Motrin or do the Tylenol Motrin dance so you can get that pain relief more often. Be careful and watch what it describes.
And talk to your doctor and ask them. And when they say, you know, that they personally at that moment can't do something, you might be able to do it at the pharmacy. When my daughter was getting her wisdom teeth out, they were giving us like a 10-day supply of narcotic pain relievers. She didn't want to take any. She doesn't like to even take an over-the-counter pain reliever. But it was, you know, it was Friday afternoon. I wanted to make sure that if she woke up in misery, she had one. They wouldn't give me just one, but my pharmacist would.
Which is great. So working with your doctors and pharmacists. And the last thing I want to talk about is that give your kids an out. When, like Sandy mentioned a couple minutes ago, it might not be your medicine cabinet. It might be a friend coming into your house of your child's, but they're also going to be going different places and you don't know if the other parents have medicine cabinets or if other kids are going to bring drugs and things like that to their gatherings. So make an out for your kids. I love the method, I guess is the best way to put it. I don't even know how to talk about that, but the method of text to code, that if your child texts you a certain thing, you immediately call them saying it's time for you to pick them up. You give them an out.
No explanations, I will be there in however long it's going to take you either. I will be there in 5 minutes or I'll be there in 10 minutes, be standing outside, I'm picking you up, and you hang up the phone.
Exactly. And when they get in the car, do not third degree grill. That is the biggest thing. It's like, thank you so much for calling me. If you want to talk to me about it, I'm here to listen. But you don't want to be that judgment thing right then and there. You just want to get them out of that situation, let them have a little time to process without you in their face about never hanging out with those people again, kind of a thing.
Yeah, because you don't know what happened and you don't know what went down. And if you're worried about them, you can ask, are you okay? Is there any way I can help you right now?
Exactly. So, Sandy, really quickly, give us the bullet points of what we covered today because we're rapid fire.
All right. Yes. So, bottom line is that our kids are under a ton of pressure. And listen to the shows to you'll find out more and more ways that they are dealing with things that we never had to deal with. But just accept that they are. Their world is different. And that pressure can lead to emotional pain. And emotional pain can cause them to use unhealthy coping strategies if they don't have the healthy coping strategies to deal with it. One of the very sneaky unhealthy coping strategies are prescription medications. So as parents, you know, we end up contributing to this emotional pain and to the problems they're experiencing by inadvertently judging them, sending them the message that they can't do it, not knowing or not teaching them those healthy coping strategies or not allowing them to experience the negative emotions that require them to practice those healthy coping strategies. And also we refuse sometimes to take off our blinders and accept that our child could be in emotional pain or our child could be doing something like using prescription drugs. So we've got the problem. What can we do about it? We have four things we mentioned. One, watch what's being prescribed. Ask questions, ask for alternatives, you know, talk about using over-the-counter meds for pain relief or smaller doses or less addictive meds. Ask your doctor those questions and also talk to your pharmacist. They're another source of information. Lock up and watch the medications that are in your house. Get rid of unused prescriptions, yours, your family's, your pets, and give your kids a code word to get them out of a sticky situation, no questions asked. This was awesome, Jude. I totally love this chat. I think this was really great.
Mm-hmm. And if you want more information, we're going to put some resources and some tips inside the post that will be on the mightyparentingpodcast.com episode 4 page. So on that post. So stay tuned for Real Talk right after this brief message.
Parenting is the toughest job you'll ever love. It's a common phrase because it's so true. And as the teen years roll around
and you start seeing changes in your child, and you may start wondering, what's going on? Are they okay? Is this normal? And again, as they move out of the house, go out on their own, go off to college, you see more changes. And sometimes the changes are perfectly normal. And sometimes they're an indication that your child's in over their head, that there are things going on that they can't handle. And the parents' worry and their concern is, how do I know the difference? Well, now there's a book that can tell you. It's Warning Signs, and it is a parenting guide to help you understand about those changes and to help you figure out if your child could be at risk for depression, addiction, or suicide. The book will take you by the hand, walk you through that understanding, give you the confidence to be able to take the next step, to have a conversation or whatever it is that you need to do, and to give you some idea on some of the paths that you can follow. You can go to dasium.net to the store in the shop there and get your own copy.
Welcome back. It's time for Real Talk. That show was amazing, but all I can think about right now is how much I have to blow my nose and deal with this cold and flu and everything. And everything in me just wants to be on a beach out in Florida or down in the island somewhere with a umbrella drink in my hand and just kicking back, because this winter weather is kicking my booty. So, you know, when we have such a intense topic, I guess, an important topic, I like to follow it up with a little bit of fun. So Sandy, let's talk fun. Let's talk about going to the beaches of wherever. And I know that you look at vacations a little bit differently, and that's what I wanted to talk about on today's Real Talk, because often we come at things thinking vacations should be one way, and you look at them very differently. And when I first found that out, it was really refreshing, and I think that our listeners would really get something from that. So first, tell me how you look at vacations.
Yeah, I definitely do this differently. And when I had my last radio show, we talked lots of times about vacations and how to get the family vacation you really want. And the first thing is, it's so funny, Judy, that you're talking about going to beaches and things, because when you ask an adult where they would personally go on vacation, I mean, there are some who got to be doing stuff. I have many of those in my family. However, really, most adults, especially moms, they'll talk about just sitting on the beach, you know, lying in a lounge chair around the pool, reading a book or something like that. But when we have families, when we have kids, that's not the vacation we plan. The vacation we plan is Disney World or
in 3 days.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you're getting up and racing and going to things and doing things. And there are oftentimes, you know, water parks and these high intensity activities, you know, skiing and things that just that take a lot. So the way that I look at vacations, there are a number of things we can talk about. But the very first thing I want you to just do is go, what do we really want from our vacation? Do we just want to get out of the cold and go someplace warm? Do we just want to get out of the heat and go someplace cold? Do we want a lot of like family bonding time, time where we're going to be able to really talk and interact with each other? Do we just want some fun and excitement? And talk to your family about this, because, you know, we think we know what people want. I discovered this with my Christmas stuff, which I'm sure at some point we'll end up talking about a little bit. But, you know, when it came to Christmas traditions, I thought I knew what my kids' favorite traditions were. And when things got busy and we had to cut things back and I started asking them, I was shocked at what they told me, you know, what really mattered to them and what didn't. So think about what you want, what you need, what you want for your family, and then talk to your family and ask them what they want.
Okay, so here it is. I have this expectation, and I think expectations is the thing that can trip up a family vacation faster than anything else. If you expect it to be one thing and it doesn't do that, then you say, oh, it was a failure. It wasn't good. Didn't fill me up again. It didn't do this. So yeah. What I hear you saying is get that expectation on the same page. So what exact questions would I say to my teenager, mm-hmm. what do I say to them as we're figuring out where we're going this summer on our vacation?
Yeah, so that's really great, Judy. And I don't know if we'll get to talking about expectations today, but I know we're going to be doing a show all about expectations and how that can mess you up. That is part of it. But getting everyone on the same page is a really helpful thing. So if you're talking to a teenager, I would go to them and go, hey, you know, every year we plan a family vacation. And before we start planning it, I want to know, what would you like from this vacation? And there's a good chance they may get just sulky and go, I don't care. I don't want to go anyway. I want to be here with my friends, or I have work, or I have whatever. And in which case, you know, you have to gauge it with your kids. With mine, I would look at them and go, I get that. I totally get that. But I love you. I want to spend time with you. So whether you like it or not, you're coming on the family vacation. You would probably be happier if you give a little input. So, you know, open that up to them and don't beg and plead. If they refuse, they refuse. And then, you know, deal with that and let it be, and let your expectation about the perfect family vacation go. But ask them what they'd like to do. And if they tell you where they want to go, then say, ooh, that's really interesting. Why there? What is it about that place? Because you can have 8 people in your family who all want to go someplace different, but they could all be looking for the same thing out of it. So why do you want to go there? What sounds interesting about that to you?
Or on the flip side, they could all want to go to the same place, but have different thoughts about what that means.
Yes. Great point, Jude. That's a really great point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what is the, what you want from it as far as like what you want to do, but also again, ask them. So, you know, what are you looking for from this? You know, do you feel like you need some downtime? We were talking about all the stress they're under. Maybe we're going to go plan a trip again to, you know, where we're going to have 3 museums, 2 water parks and 8 athletic activities in 5 days. When what they need is to lay around on a beach and sit by the pool, you know? So ask them, you know, where do you want to go? What do you want to do? What it is about that? What would you look for from a family vacation? What do you need right now? Do you need some downtime? Do you need some connection? Do you need to recharge? What do you need from us? And do that with every person in your family.
And
individually.
Exactly. And I'm going to say, and do it for yourself out loud to your family, especially when you have teens and young adults in your family. Mm-hmm. When they are that age, they can be very eye-centered, right? They can think that their world is the only thing and that you don't get it. But if you can use this understanding what you need as well, your teen can get you on a different, more personal level. So if you just pretend that everything is always for the family and not for yourself, your kids notice that. So as you're asking everyone's needs, be sure that you don't ignore your needs and communicate that with your family members, because your needs matter as much as theirs do.
They do. And you need to bring everybody back together. I said ask them individually, because you'll get better answers that way without one sibling influencing another. We all know, you know, somebody controls that show. But then bring everybody together and just talk about, say, you know, we have, people have brought up a lot of different things. People need different things, and try to work through that together. Yes, bottom line, parents get to make the final decision. But include them in the process, and you might come up with, you know, a whole brand new idea. And when they're on it, they may enjoy it more. And I want to cram in one more thing before, because I know you're going to cut me off.
I am.
So my last piece of advice, and we don't need to discuss this in detail, is I know you want to spend as much time as you can wherever you're going on vacation. But whether you're, you know, whether you volunteer a lot, whether you are, you know, very busy taking care of your home, whether you have a job, give yourself a day or two off after you get back from vacation.
You need a vacation from your vacation.
You do. Everybody does. Planning the right vacation helps with that, but coming back and making a sudden transition super quickly is hard too. So do everything you can. Cut your vacation one day short if that's what you need, so everyone can come home and unpack and have one day to be blobs around the house before you need to go back to life.
I love it. I love it. I love this topic and this discussion and about getting, and now all I can think of is my, you know, sandy beaches and my warmness and all of that. So Sandy, I'm going to throw it to you because my voice is about ready to go. Can you please wrap it up for us and take it?
So, couple of things. One is Judy and I believe that you can be the parent you want to be. So we are here to encourage you. If you are, you know, we hope that you're subscribed through your favorite podcast place, whether it's iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play Store, wherever, and we're working on spreading out to more places. So if we're not there yet, let us know what it is and we'll try and get there. Also, pop over to mightyparentingpodcast.com and you'll see a little note there where you can pop in your email address. We'll send you just a quick email saying, hey, there's a new show out, so you'll know what's happening, what they're about kind of thing. But there's also a little gift in there from us. We have a little bookmark to inspire you, to remind you of one of the really important messages from parenting. We really think that it helps, and we hear good things from people about it. So we invite you to go get that. We also invite you to come to Mighty Parenting Group on Facebook. We are having conversations there. You can ask questions. If there's something you want to ask that is personal, you don't want to put on there, you can email us. We'll post it for you. It's a great place to get information to share what you know. Mm-hmm. So do both of those. And until next time, I'm Sandy Fowler with my cohort, Judy Davis. Until next week, become a mighty parent.
Thanks.